Hi everyone, Abby here. In this podcast, I was joined by my colleague Cordelia at CFG, and we spoke to Laura Wright, who's the Chief Executive Officer at the Postal Museum. We started off by asking Laura a bit about her background and her career in the museum sector so far.
Well, I won't go all the way back, because that would be a long time. But I've been in the museum sector since I worked at the Institute of Contemporary Arts many years ago. And after that I was at the Portrait Gallery and then spent a long time at Tate. So joined it to set up the shops at Tate Modern and went there thinking, oh, I'll be here for a couple of years, and didn't leave until 19 years later.
Wow.
And I think that's because everything was always new at Tate. You know, it was always moving on. There was always something exciting to do there. Yeah, it was a really brilliant time in my career. So I did three different roles there. Started off as the retail manager at Tate Modern and ended up being the CEO of Tate Enterprises, which is the revenue generating part of Tate.
Right, I see. And you've been at the Postal Museum for just over a year now?
Yeah, pretty much a year exactly.
And what was it that kind of made you decide to move from the Tate to the Postal Museum?
So it was a few things really, some quite personal and some more professional. I think the personal thing was that one of the things I really valued about Tate was always thinking, oh, I'm learning something new. And Tate was going through a time of change, and I just didn't really want to be the one in the corner that everyone said, oh, she's been here forever. You know, always kind of wanted to be in a room and think, oh, this is exciting. So it wasn't that it wasn't exciting at Tate, it was just that I felt that I'd been around a long time and maybe they could do with some new blood. So that was the personal stuff. The professional stuff was more around wanting to work with a smaller team. You know, Tate's amazing, but it's huge. Mm-hmm. And that I really wanted to work with a team where I know everyone's names and I can feel that we're all in it together. I also wanted to come to an organisation that was a social history museum and that really was about telling human stories. And I love art, I love contemporary art, I've been in it for a long time, I'm married to an artist, but it's quite hard really to tell human stories around art and contemporary art. And you know, for many people it's an extremely, it's quite intimidating and it's difficult to get into, and I just thought, oh, I'd really like to be somewhere where everybody knows something about that subject and can feel that they can contribute, and that real sense of having a dialogue is a very genuine one. So that was the main reason for coming to the Postal Museum.
And what kind of challenges have you faced, or if any challenges have you faced since moving here? Is there anything to do with maybe the size of the team or anything like that?
I guess some challenges. I mean, some differences. It's been a really steep learning curve for me. Some of which has just been thrilling and exciting, and some of which has been more challenging. So I guess I hadn't realised how steeped I was in being in a nationally funded museum, and you do just get a particular view of the sector if you work for a large organisation and it's funded. So I guess moving to the independent sector has been really eye-opening, and the real upsides of that, of course I have a flip side of course, so the upside is that everybody always has new ideas. It seems like a really entrepreneurial sector. People are very open and friendly. There's a real sense of positivity. So I went to the Association of Independent Museums conference where we met and chatted, and I just really loved the energy about that conference. Everybody saying, what can we do next? And here's some ideas, and how does this work for you? And that was great. Of course, the flip side of that is that everybody's out there on their own. You've got to raise your own funding, your own income. Many places are really reliant on volunteers to keep going. And so I guess that sense of freedom and independence is also accompanied by a sense of, you know, vulnerability and what's going to happen next kind of feeling.
It must be, it feels like it's a higher sense of investment in a way, because you've got that more encompassing position for in an independent museum.
Yes.
And I think that's a conversation to have with other A members and other people from independent museums. It seems that the roles are so fulfilled in that way. So it must be quite a difference.
Again, one of the things I was really aware of at Tate, and I think Tate knows, but can almost do nothing about, if anyone's listening from there, then they might have to scream. But I think at Tate, it's a huge organisation, and when you're dealing, and it very much wants to partner with smaller organisations, but as a smaller organisation, there might be one person doing six roles, and, you know, if you want to go into partnership with a large place, you end up having to talk to 20 people at Tate who are doing all the things that you're covering. And so actually, I mean, personally, I really like the idea that one day I'll be drafting strategy for the next 3 to 5 years to talk to our board about, and the following day I'll be the weekend senior and I might tidy out the stock cupboard. And I really like that balance of the micro and the macro, but you do have to have a real firm handle on that, so you don't end up either, you know, going down a rabbit hole and doing all sorts of small tasks that don't get you anywhere, yeah. Or you spend loads of time talking about the big picture and everyone else is running around, you know, trying to get stuff done. So I think for all of us, I mean, compared to other independent museums, we're probably quite a large team. We've got 50 full-time members of staff and about 25 part-time. So again, if you're talking to an organisation you're hoping to partner with and they've got 5 members of staff, then just have to be really conscious of how that works in terms of workload and so on.
Yeah, that's really interesting. It's really interesting differences. So tell us a bit about the Postal Museum, its background, what it does.
Okay, so I've learnt this all in the last year, so I'm sure there are people more expert than me. But the Postal Museum developed from the collection of the GPO, and then, of course, that turned into Royal Mail and the Post Office. And at some point, some of the members of our team were employed by Royal Mail, and then a charitable trust was formed to look after the collection, to service the archives of Royal Mail and Post Office, and to start developing a museum. There was a museum years ago which was opened by the Queen, but it shut some years after that when the building closed. So there's been this sense for a while, I think, within the organisation of saying we need a public face. But for many years, it was an archive based in a building just up the road from where we are now in Farringdon, and had maybe 2,000 visitors a year making appointments to come and see material in the archive. And so I think the idea of the museum floated around over many years. It was going to be in lots of different places. I think it was going to be in Swindon at one point. And finally this site was found, and it went into development and opened almost 2 years ago now, and has been incredibly successful. We've had hundreds of thousands of visitors, which is very exciting, and we've got really good feedback from those visitors. I think they really enjoy it, with great reviews. One of the things they say is, I unexpectedly had more fun than I expected. And of course, what we want to get to is a place where people really expect to have a great time when they come here and learn things and find it really interesting. So one of the things I've been working on since I got here is I arrived and I saw this amazing building, people having a great time, and I said, how brilliant, we've opened, what next? What's our vision? And people kind of said, that's what we've been asking as well, because of course everybody gets into this situation when a capital project is in the offing, where they really focus on the building and the opening, and it's quite difficult to see beyond that sometimes. you sort of feel like you're preparing for it, but really, you know, that moment of opening the doors is such a big one. And I can remember that from being at Tate Modern, and just that sense of the world's watching us and we're going to open the doors on this day and it's got to be brilliant. So it's actually quite hard to project beyond that and go, and what next? So we've had a brilliant time here over the last few months going, okay, so what's our purpose? What are we going to be doing? And we really have, again, that's what's so brilliant about working with a smaller team. Everyone's had the chance to get involved with that. So I thought to myself, over the course of my career, I've been in hundreds of workshops and I've written on thousands of post-it notes, and we must be able to do this work ourselves. And everyone can be involved in that. And so we really got our heads together and we said, this is what we're going to come up with. And I'm handing out some little cards now to you.
Which say
what our mission and vision are. So it's very much around communication and connection, championing good communication in individuals and societies. And so, yes, we're a museum of postal history, but we're also about saying, why did the post exist? It existed to connect people. That's all, you know, whether it's for political or business or personal reasons. And so what really we're really thinking about now is communication and connection and how we can tell human stories through all of the programme that we do. So it's been a really exciting year.
That's so interesting. I love these.
We should have these.
Very inspiring.
I think you should be able to fit your vision on a business size card for simplicity.
So I guess in terms of, you mentioned that obviously with the role of storytelling here, it's quite a unique story, and you mentioned obviously your goal is to kind of explore those stories. How are you going about doing that? Are there certain ways that you're looking at, certain methods?
Yeah, so lots and lots of different methods, and probably if you spoke to people in our collections team or a learning team, you get all sorts of really interesting and nuanced answers about how we can interpret our collections and our programme for different kinds of visitors. But some of the things that we're doing are, for example, thinking about our schools programmes and thinking about the children we work with and the fact that they come from schools that have kids from quite a deprived background, and what is it that we really want them to leave here with? So one of the things we want them to do is really have fun when they come to a museum. We want them to feel like it's a place for them, to feel like they can go into any museum in the future and they kind of get it and they understand that these museums exist for people like them. We want them to learn things. So often, and the post is a gift for, you know, for literacy or for maths. So building just really useful programmes around the curriculum should be really good for us. But the other thing we want to do is we want them to end up being confident communicators. And if you think about the benefit of private schools, and you think about who are the people who are in power in many of our organisations and institutions, lots of them went to private school, and the thing they got from that was, one, a kind of networking, and two, just confidence. Confidence in their ability and their place in the world and their ability to communicate freely with all sorts of people. And we want to try and help all of our kids who come through the schools programme have that confidence as well. So that's one way. Another way to think about it is, well, we definitely want it to be a two-way communication. So when people walk through the door, we don't want them to be passive, and we don't want our team to be passive in kind of greeting them. So they're not, of course, they're here to show people around and help them get on and off the train safely and all of that kind of thing, but also they're here to just talk to them. So we really want people to come in and be able to tell their stories, and we want that to be a dialogue. So we've been thinking about, well, what are the behaviours that we would then need to display every day in our work that would help people engage in that way? So we've been developing a behaviours framework, which again has been totally driven by the team here. So they've all said, these are the ways that we work when we're working brilliantly, and here's some of the ways where it's not about brilliant behaviour. And we've been trying to pull that together in a really useful, short meaningful way, so that what we can say is communication is at the heart of what we do, therefore how we communicate is really, really important, and we're going to interview for that and train for that and just help people connect and communicate in different ways when they're working here, and hopefully that will be really fulfilling for them. So that's just two kinds of things, but there's all sorts of other stuff going on as well.
That's really interesting. I really like the reflection between your internal values and what you're hoping to bring to the visitor experience as well.
Yes, we really want it to be out, inside out and outside in, and the more that happens, I guess, the less distinction there is between those two.
Absolutely. Our final question, really, Laura.
Gosh, that's gone quickly.
What's your big thing on the agenda for this year?
So it's a bit of a balance, actually. I still feel really quite new in post, and the museum still feels really new. And I think 2 years is nothing, is it, in a museum's life. We feel newborn still in terms of being a museum. So I guess in some ways we're still grounding, well, what does our finance look like? You know, what does our budget look like? What do we have? What can we afford to do? We've got huge ambitions. And I think all museums are in the situation always, aren't they, where they just want to do more than they can afford. So what does our money look like? And how are we balancing that? And how can we plan longer term? But then we've got the big overarching thing of how can we reflect all of our programmes, partnerships and ways of working through our vision. And then we've got a couple of really big projects on the go. So when I arrived here, I did think, thank goodness I never have to live through another capital project, because there's been hundreds of them over the last 20 years. But then I'd been here a fortnight and I thought, no, we haven't got enough space. So we are really restricted for space. Our land is very, very tightly circumscribed. So we're having to think of perhaps slightly more laterally about ways of getting more content into the museum, and being quite mysterious because I can't say loads about that because it's at such an early stage. But it's about driving more content into the museum, and then it's also about really focusing on what I think is going to be our big thing, which is accessibility. So in a quite paradoxical way, we opened a museum, a part of which is very inaccessible to people with certainly physical disabilities, but also sensory ones. Mm-hmm. So our train is very small, it goes through very small tunnels, it's quite a claustrophobic experience, and you need to be able to evacuate safely from it. So we really thought about that, and we did a big audit of our access issues. And then we just started thinking, do you know what? We could really do amazing things here if we have the imagination and the right partners to do it with. So that's part of what we're working on as well. So again, I can't say more about that, but that's our big thing, I think, for the next year.
Amazing. Sounds incredible.
Yeah, it's going to be great.
Brilliant. Thank you so much for joining us, Laura.
It's
been a really interesting chat.
Thank you so much. It's been great.
Thanks. That was less painful than I thought.